The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
With the bye rounds behind us and Thursday night footy done for the moment, we're back to normality in the AFL season. So who were the biggest winners and the losers out of almost a calamitous round 17? It's your favourite time of the week. It's the Fox Footy Podcast, all thanks to the Fox Footy app. Download the free Fox Footy app from the App Store and Google Play today for all the latest and best news, highlights, scores and stats. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth. And a slight change to the regular team. Maxi Lawton out of the host chair, which did a great job last week. Tuning in from WA, I was last week, Maxi. So welcome back to you.
Thank you, Ben. I'm very glad to hear that. That ad read sounds a lot better when you know what you're supposed to say instead of making it up off the top of your head.
Yes, no, you did a very nice job, actually, off the top of your head last week. And Sarah Olley, the host of The Lowdown, is back with us in the podcast bunker by popular demand, it has to be said. Hello, Skaz.
Hello, Ben. Thank you for having me back. And it's good to be here without Tom Morris, but hopefully he is listening from afar. Hello, Tom.
He did almost demand to be dialed in from Lisbon, but we did deny him that opportunity. So let's start with, as I mentioned off the top, it was a strange round 17 in terms of, as Jared Waitley dubs it, the snakes and ladders on AFL 360. There was a lot of movement on the ladder. I assume a lot of movement in the power rankings as well, which you're putting together. So from a run-home perspective, which is now up on foxfooty.com.au, who were the big winners and who were the big losers out of the weekend?
Well, I think it was it six upsets I saw?
I reckon.
In one regard, it's remarkable.
Tipping nightmare.
Some kind of record, I think.
Yes, I believe it was. GWS, a huge winner, obviously. Not just because they beat Richmond, which, you know, few would have tipped and is a huge thing for their season in terms of the win total they need to get to. But Hawthorn losing, because Hawthorn's the other big loser. Losing not just to Brisbane, but in Tassie.
Yes.
Two in completely unexpected things, even if they had lost to Brisbane earlier this season. It's just remarkable. And the combination of those things, for the run-home perspective, has changed what I think the top eight will be. I think GWS makes it now, and I think the Hawks don't.
GWS makes it, even though Hawthorn have got the easiest draw, according to many. According to you, according to Champion Data as well.
Yeah, them and Carlton are the easiest ones, and it's amazing that Carlton is such an easy draw when they don't get to play themselves. But Hawthorn at this point can get to 13 wins and still miss. Yeah. You look at what Hawthorn has coming up. Carlton at Etihad should win. Carlton's been looking quite terrible. Tick. Fremantle over there suddenly looks a lot more difficult based on the fact that the Dockers knocked off Port.
But that's more about Port just not turning up to play, isn't it? And losing two of their best players. I don't know if we can really read that far into it.
Okay. So 20% upset sort of possibility?
Yeah, let's say mathematics.
Essendon at the MCG is still a very tough game. Like, I wasn't convinced by Essendon at all against Gold Coast, but I still think they are definitely good enough to beat Hawthorn. We saw how good they were against Collingwood the week before last. And then Geelong at the G, St Kilda at Etihad, again, should win, and Sydney at the SCG. So they can win all of those games. They've beaten Geelong and Sydney this year, have they not? So did the Swans just get over the top of them, actually? I'm remembering how close that game was. Of course. But it's a winnable draw for Hawthorn. But even if they get to 13, they could still be passed by everyone else. Everyone above them has a path to 13 or more wins. Mm. I think GWS is good enough to get to 13.5 now. You look at who they play. Port Adelaide might be the season-defining game for them.
Yep.
As much as Richmond was. Over there at the Adelaide Oval, as you said, it was as much about Port being bad as it was Fremantle being good. So what does that say for this game this week? Would you not tip GWS to go over there and win again, as they did when they played the Crows a few weeks ago?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call from you, Maxi. And I think the injury to Paddy Ryder, I mean, everyone's talking about Nick Natten because it is going to be, you know, 12 to 18 months out. But that is significant for Port because they don't have another ruckman to come in. So it's Charlie Dixon that goes in, it's Justin Westhoff, and it stuffs their whole structure.
And Ken Hinckley has been hesitant to play those young Billy Frampton. Sam Hayes is out with an ACL injury as well, their draftee from last year. So it's going to put a fair bit of pressure on Charlie Dixon. Just back to Hawthorn. So rarely we do this. As we go to air podcast breaking news, James Sisley unfortunately has fractured his wrist.
Has he?
Yes, and going to miss the next 6 weeks.
That's huge.
For Hawthorn.
All-Australian contender James Sisley.
Yes, so there's a couple of things. There's that. He is in All-Australian contention, even though he's going to miss 6 weeks, and he missed a couple of weeks also with suspension. Yes. So one, from a selfish perspective, how much has this ruined his All-Australian chances? And two, does that make Does that sort of further solidify your thoughts that Hawthorn, Maxi, can't make the finals this year?
Yes and yes, if I'm remembering both questions correctly.
You did. Well done.
So what is he going to miss in total? 8 weeks of the season, potentially? Yep. Maybe nine? I don't remember the exact specifics of the suspensions, but that's so much time to miss. It's hard to get all Australians 13, 14 games in a season.
That's too hard.
And then for the run home as well, I mean, he's such a key part of that. They've had quite a good defence. They haven't been a super high-scoring team all season. Mm. We've seen they can reach those high scores, but not consistently. So if they can't win those defensive battles and shut people down, it is going to be tough for them.
You covered the game on Saturday, Sarah, between Hawthorn and Brisbane, and numerous times, despite a very disappointing afternoon for the Hawks, Sicily was steadfast down back, taking intercept mark after intercept mark. That's going to be a huge blow for them.
And something he brings is a bit of swagger.
Ooh,
it's what
yes.
Toby Green brings to the Giants. He has a strut about him, and he gives a confidence, I think, to his teammates and the players around him. But you're right, he kept them in that game for a lot of that game. But, I mean, he's just one man. Who can take over that role as that interceptor in defence? Has Ryan Burton been...
Yeah.
Game?
Well, he has been getting a game, but he's been thrown around a little bit more. He was, he's second in the Rising Star last year. Yeah. He can certainly play that role if he's able to get back to that form that he showed last year. But Sicily, I think, is just a class above. Like, rightly in All-Australian contention, not only for his ability one-on-one, but his intercepting work and his ability to hit the scoreboard as well, which we saw against Adelaide a couple of last month, I think it was. So that's going to be fascinating. Yeah. Just quickly from another run home perspective, Geelong and Melbourne meet this week. So Geelong went down to Adelaide. Melbourne got a nice percentage booster against the Bulldogs on the weekend. How important is this game for these respective teams?
It's really big. I think both teams can still make it if they lose. Geelong probably needs to win it a little bit more. They're a win behind Melbourne. Melbourne being on 10 right now, they've got some margin for error, which they need. Because their run home's really tough. As you say, Geelong at the Cattery, Adelaide and Adelaide, Gold Coast at the G, you should clock that one up. Sydney at the MCG, West Coast in Perth, which suddenly looks a lot tougher now that they've got all their players back, and GWS at the MCG. GWS at the MCG for Melbourne could easily be a finals deciding game or a game for seeding. The way I have the whole season shaking out, Melbourne wins that game and because of that plays GWS again in week one of finals.
Right.
One of those sort of Hawthorn-Sydney situations from a couple of years ago.
Is it possible, Maxi, for the Giants to finish in the top four?
I think so, yeah. They're on, 9.5 wins? They've got St Kilda, Carlton on the docket and then Adelaide and Canberra. They should win all three of those because they're so good in Canberra. And then Sydney at spotless, Melbourne at the G. Yeah, they can win all of those, if not five, and get there. And that does rely on Collingwood and Port sliding a bit. If either of them win four games... They get to 15, which does make it tough for GWS, but Port didn't look great, so I don't trust them to win four of their last six. And Collingwood, we don't know.
It's funny what the draw does. That 2 points can either be your biggest friend or your worst nightmare, can't it?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to end up helping them because the way I end up doing the run home is I'm tipping a lot of favourites to win, and we see that that doesn't happen every week. So if you're able to get to 13 quite easily, as we think Hawthorn is, they can take advantage of any mistakes. And GWS can do the same thing by being on 13.5 and be ahead of any of those teams. So, and Adelaide, sort of in a similar situation to Hawthorn, just to touch briefly on them, they look good enough to make it, but I don't think they can. They've just made their run way too late.
So from the top of the ladder, we go towards the bottom. Well, probably not near the bottom anymore for the Brisbane Lions. They've won three in the trot. We talked about Hawthorn quite a fair bit, but a lot of credit has to go to Chris Fagan and the Lions and how much that win meant. You could see when they sung the song down there in the University of Tasmania change rooms. That meant a lot to that side. And then the comparison between Brisbane and Carlton has been ongoing for a long time, Sarah. So you've got the Lions winning three in a row, Carlton's with 24 losses from their past 26 games. And the biggest thing they have to cheer about so far this year has been Stephen Silfani's defiant TV interview on Footy Classified on Monday night.
It was gripping TV, wasn't it?
It was.
You couldn't really look away. And it's go to foxfooty.com.au to see the story and the vision because it is very compelling indeed. I'd love it if more list managers came out and went toe-to-toe with Kara like that. It would make for very interesting viewing. But as you were saying, Ben, that comparison, I don't even think there's a comparison anymore.
No.
The Lions and the Blues, they don't look anything alike. And in fact, when I did Maxi's power rankings before, I think I had the Lions maybe 12th?
Yeah, 12th, 13th.
Which sounds silly, but that's where they're at the moment. Yep. They're a lot better than teams above them.
Yep. You put them ahead of the Western Bulldogs and Fremantle, probably, those kind of sides.
Contending to Essendon sort of spot. Yep.
And Josh Jenkins, I think, was asked in an interview maybe this morning or yesterday, what is it about the Lions and why are they spoken about in a different vein to Carlton and St Kilda? And he was quite honest and forthright. He just said, well, the Lions are playing this exciting winning brand of footy.
Yep.
which probably St Kilda and the Blues don't have.
Definitely, yeah. That's a very good point. Just on Josh Jenkins as well and the whole player takeover round on Fox Footy. We hope you all got a chance to sort of witness and take in how that all went down. Jenkins and Dangerfield on Friday night were a pretty gripping viewing on an interesting night between St Kilda and Carlton, the media side of things in terms of player access from the Saints, and then player takeover, Dangerfield, Ben Brown, and Josh Jenkins as well was gripping viewing. Just on the Carlton Stephen Silvani interview last night, you mentioned how you wish more list managers would take on Caro. Well, that was one of his interesting points throughout the interview, and there's a lot of points to take out of it. That a lot of list managers, Maxi, actually don't front up or either don't front up or aren't asked to or requested to conduct an interview. Silvani's a different case because he's arguably the greatest fullback of all time. What did you make of the whole chat from Silvani? Did he win the gold medal?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of fair points to what the arguments he was making. I think he's coming from a base of defending a very bad situation, but he presented it very well. On the list management thing, there's this interesting thing that's been happening with Carlton where every couple of weeks, a lot of people in the media say, Carlton need to come out and speak about what's going on, even though they did it the 2 weeks before.
Yes.
We had Michael Gudishay front page of the Herald Sun or back page talking about stuff. And then they lost the game to Brisbane. And again, all the talk was, well, they need to come out and talk about this because this is really bad. Yeah, well, they were already really bad. They're still really bad. We know they're really bad.
I think the fans, though, Maxi, they want some kind of engagement.
Do they?
Collingwood have a members forum every year where Nathan Buckley and Eddie Maguire, they get up and they get asked questions and they're accountable. I think maybe Carlton have gotten to the stage where they could be doing that too, just to be giving something back to the supporters, because it's a slog at the moment.
Like, it is.
There's nothing to be happy about.
I think they do have some sort of thing like that, or some sort of members function on game days where Lugusha is available to talk to just members and stuff like that. So that's a positive from their point of view. And what is there to keep saying? Yeah, we're bad. We're supposed to be bad. This was our intention. Yeah. They keep making that point.
It's hard to spin, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a very hard thing to spin, and people keep coming from the perspective of how could they be this bad? But you... And we've said it on the podcast before. You look at where they were going to be on their trajectory of their rebuild, and then you tie in the injuries to Sam Doherty and losing Bryce Gibbs in that trade. They're just going to be terrible. You know, I had them last at the start of the season, and this is where they are. So,
One win, though? Like, did you expect them to have one win to their name?
Yeah, I thought they might win three for the season. And a lot of those are going to be, at least two of those, probably be upsets, where it's like, oh, they randomly beat Essendon, as they did earlier this season. Yeah. So they should probably beat Gold Coast in a couple of weeks. Although that's a 50-50 game at this point, and it's being played at Metricon makes it tough. But, that's how bad you can be, and there's no difference, realistically, between a one-win team and a four-win team. They're both terrible. They're both not going anywhere soon. They're both getting a very high draft pick. So be as bad as you can. And the problem, where I would agree with people, is bringing in the recruits who aren't contributing anything right now. And that's where Soss came out and said that he was recruiting some players to play at VFL level. But then they're playing at AFL level. Because of injuries, yes. So it's like this sort of rolling thing that makes things look worse even than they are when you have those issues coming into play. So.
Can I say something else I loved about that interview?
Mm.
Just Chris Judd.
Oh, yes.
Just in the background. He couldn't look up. No eye contact. It was just, to quote Ronan Keating, he said it best. He said nothing at all. He didn't have to say anything, Chris Judd. He just looked so awkward. But it was sensational.
I reckon it's the first Ronan Keating reference on the podcast.
I'm surprised Tom hasn't brought one in at some point.
That's very true.
Very Tom, yes.
So on the couch last night, Paul Roos sort of went in depth a little bit about the Blues in terms of a blueprint that worked well for Melbourne back in 2012, 2013 when Roosie came to the club and took on the senior coaching reins, to one that might translate to Carlton a little bit down the line. So he was big on bringing coaches along with you. Brendan Bolton's done that to a certain extent with Cameron Bruce coming along at Hawthorn. But the big one was being creative at the draft and also bringing in an experienced player like what Brisbane has done with Luke Hodge, like what Essendon did with James Kelly and with Ruse, Daniel Cross and Bernie Vince coming in from Melbourne. Is that a blueprint that heading into their fourth postseason of this rebuild, Sarah, that might be able to work for the Blues?
Well, who do they target? Which senior players do they target?
I think McVay's the obvious one.
He's been thrown out, but I think it was Roos last night. He said that he's ensconced, good word.
Ensconced, yes.
in Sydney, and he is.
John Longmire said something along the lines of he has a contract to coach when his playing career is over at Sydney.
Yeah.
So he can't coach anywhere else next year. We know that.
Yeah. I mean, he's the right type of player that you want to bring to the club with so much experience. He's a premiership player. Was he a premiership captain?
Premiership captain in 2012.
I should know that, God. and you know, he brings all that Swans IP as well, which is just so significant.
Works so well for Gold Coast with Stuart Jones.
Too soon.
Well, that's true. They meet each other this weekend, so.
So Stuart Jew's going to know the key to unlocking the Swans, and the Suns will win. That's what you're predicting?
It worked for Chris Fagan, so why not Stuart Jew?
It works really well.
Sarah Ollie guaranteed.
But they do need to target someone. Who else is out of contract like that, though? Because if I'm a senior player, I don't know if I'm wanting to be going to Carlton.
They threw up Sean Higgins last night, which I thought was fascinating. But I realistically, that won't happen.
He's a Brownlow contender.
He's 30 years of age. He's perfect for them in that midfield.
He's too good. He's too good for that role. You need a player who's like good, but more good at everything other than playing incredibly good footy, you know?
When you talk about what Ruse did, I think Daniel Cross was quite an exceptional player in terms of what he brought off the field.
Yep.
It was only recently that Ruse said how much he contributed to the culture and to setting Melbourne on the right path. So it doesn't necessarily have to be someone who's an outright superstar like a Sean Higgins. It just needs to be someone who's going to really set the tone for this young group. And we know that they're missing that middle band of players, or a classy player at least within that mid-20s kind of range. So, I mean, you could target someone who's perhaps not so obvious that could really set a cultural tone. I'm not sure who that would be.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
But I think Daniel Cross is just, you know, an interesting player because, you know, he wasn't a superstar, was he?
What I really liked about Ruse's discussion and his blueprint, if you pardon the pun, is the way he wanted them to trade with pick one. Because pick one is an asset. You know, you need to use it to the best of its ability. If you can have one really fantastic player, as we think someone like Sam Walsh or Lukosius or any of those
guys
pick
one favorites
could possibly be, that could be great. Get one good player. But what we know about the draft in all sports is that you just want as many goes as possible. And if you can trade, I think the trade he floated was to Adelaide for 8-13 and Jordan Gallucci.
Yes.
Eastern Rangers.
A player like Jordan Gallucci, yes.
In that sort of role, who's a few years into the AFL system, hasn't quite defined his spot in the team and could get an opportunity.
Victorian boy.
And then you keep trading out other little pieces for other picks in the top 25 or so. I'd rather have 5 picks in the top 25 than pick one. That's just more assets, more bullets you're firing, more darts at the dartboard. You're going to hit bullseye more often by doing that.
Do they need all that young talent, though? They've already got a lot of first-round picks already on the list. And Brendan Bolton has been quite staunch in his view that we're ready to be bringing in probably more mature-age players rather than going back to the draft.
Yeah, and you can do that as well if you want to trade some of those picks around for mature-age players. I mean,
so the likes of Dom Tyson, Tom Bug, George Hall and Smith, Anthony Miles were all thrown up by Ruse last night.
So we talked about this last week with Wayne Carey's comments that the draft doesn't work, and we made fun of him for that because it was a silly comment. But the core conceit of getting some mid-tier players who you know are good enough to play at their teams but aren't getting a spot, and there's a lot of those guys at Melbourne right now, you can bring them in. They can be valuable contributors. But if you do too many of those, then you have a problem. That's what we thought Matt Kennedy would be from GWS this past year, and he's sort of getting some games, but lost a little bit. And so you run the risk. If you keep doing that, you stuff up. I'd rather have more goes at 18-year-olds who could be superstars than 22-year-olds who could be above average.
You mentioned genuine superstars the Blues are missing. The West Coast Eagles are missing a genuine superstar now for the rest of the season and potentially all of next season again. It's just terrible timing for Nick Natanui, and an ACL rupture in the latter half of the season.
Again.
Ugh. He obviously did it in 2016, and now he's done it in 2018 as well. And almost the most, besides the injury, Sarah, on Sunday, the most captivating part of the day was Adam Simpson just being so flippant frank and honest and emotional with David King in that great Fox footy interview as well.
And good on Adam Simpson for making himself available to Fox like that and showing his vulnerability. And and you could see it was uncomfortable for him, but he said, you know, and, well, vulnerability, it's the buzzword with AFL at the moment, isn't it? And showing it and showing some emotion. And he did that. And you could tell he didn't have to say Nick Nat's ruptured his ACL. You knew by looking at him. Yeah. He was gutted. Yeah. Absolutely gutted. As much for the team as for Nick himself, because he said, you know, Nick's fine. He's like in good spirits and he's making sure that everyone's enjoying the win. But, oh, it's going to be another long 18 months for Nick Natanui, and he's done his other knee this time. So now he's got two dodgy knees. Yeah. And it is really a shame because he's brought so much to this Eagles side this year. And I mean, I don't think many people thought the Eagles would be challenging for the flag, and he's been so central to it. I think this year he makes them a 37-point better team.
Yes.
And while Scott Lysett did a very good job in the second half against Collingwood and against Brodie Grundy, which is no mean feat, the Eagles are certainly worse off without Nick Nat.
It's interesting. They won the clearances after Nick Nat Nui was off the ground, which was fascinating. Maybe just Collingwood weren't prepared for that situation.
So it's this weird situation where he is probably, I think Jonathan Brown said he's the most valuable player to their team in the AFL.
Yep. That's a view shared by a lot of pundits.
I'd agree with that. And he's just so good and he contributes so many ways. But at the same time, West Coast is best placed to deal with you losing that type of player in Lysett.
So, and they've also got Nathan Vardy on the sidelines, if need be.
Yeah, exactly, who can pitch hit and play all right and go forward as well. So if you believed West Coast could win the flag before, you should still believe they can now.
So this doesn't change your opinion on the Eagles' flag credentials?
No, not really, because I didn't think they were likely to win it anyway.
Right.
I don't think they're going to be... they proved some stuff at the MCG by beating Collingwood and all of that, but I still don't think they can beat Richmond there. That doesn't really change too much based on Nick Nat to Lysett as much as I thought it would if you'd have told me he was going to get injured before this week.
So Jonathan Brown said that if you'd said to him Nick Nat goes down with a knee, he would have said the Eagles can't win the flag. But after watching Lysett in that second half, he said his opinion was changed. Yeah. But he was so impressed by that performance. And I guess that performance that's been built on the back of the Eagles playing two ruckmen throughout the entire season and Lysett having those minutes, I guess, working with the midfielders and them knowing what he's going to do. He said, no, the Eagles can still win it. And I'm with him there.
Yeah, it's like they prepared for this. In a weird way.
It's almost a bittersweet silver lining for Scott Lysett is that he's out of contract at the end of the year.
Let's be frank. It's a good injury for
my
to happen.
Goodness.
As cruel as that is to say, it's perfect for his situation,
is it not? They're going to have to throw a bit of money at him, aren't they?
Yeah, I think he'll be a wanted man, considering that the Eagles rate him so highly, and he's performed very, very admirably in... He's the best second ruck in the competition, but he could easily be, I think, a first ruck at another club.
Does it affect the Eagles also keeping Gaff and McGovern?
Yep.
And the fact that Nick Nat's out of contract at the end of next year. And we would expect him not to play before that point.
Oh, gosh, there's some strange, there's some interesting list management calls coming up for the Eagles, isn't there?
Yeah, they're going to find it really tough. You'd almost be okay losing one to be able to keep all three. Keep a lot of that structure going.
Just on Collingwood, was there anything to worry about for the Pies, says, out of that game? They had been up for a long time. They probably may have been due for a loss. Did you walk away with any concerns from that game?
Well, they dominated the first half, and really they should have been up by 4 goals at halftime. Mm. They blew a lot of chances. Yep. They just were kicking haphazardly into the forward line. And you look at the stats at the end of the match, and Jordan DeGoey's had kick four, and Josh Thomas has also kicked four. If you'd said that to me, I would have said Collingwood win.
Yeah.
So a concern was that Steele's side bottom was tagged by Mark Hutchings. Yep. He did a fantastic job, and Hutchings needs to be shown some love because he's having a great season with many scalps to his name. The problem was when side bottom wasn't firing, the midfield looked a bit, it was lacking something. I think Pendles had 25. But he wasn't influencing
the match. There's no Treloar out there still.
And no Treloar.
And no Mason Cox.
Yes.
Another big target who's been so good for them. This is another reason to believe in what he's brought to the team this season.
Certainly.
Bringing as a target there.
And some whispers around that Mason Cox's injury might be a little worse than first thought, so we'll keep an eye on that one. Just before we get into Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Fast, tonight, we're recording this on Tuesday lunchtime, tonight there will be 2 cases heard at the AFL Tribunal. The Bryce Gibbs fine, he'll try and get off a little bit lighter in the hip pocket there for Bryce Gibbs, or refuel his hip pocket, I think is the better terminology. And then Ryan Niehaus will go to AFL House.
In the middle of our street.
Yes, to contest his, well, not contest, he's been called straight to the AFL Tribunal for his, well, it's been dubbed a sling tackle, but it was very much like a dump tackle almost that Robbie Gray, that knocked out Robbie Gray momentarily, as you were covering the game as well there, Sarah. He was luckily able to get back up on his feet soon afterwards, Robbie Gray. But Ryan Niehaus seems like he's in a bit of trouble after the conduct charge was graded as careless with severe impact to the head.
It's so hard, isn't it? Because you watch the incident and Robbie Gray is out cold on the turf and you just feel sick.
Mm. Yeah.
And you feel sick about his neck, his head. We know how bad concussions can be. He got up and he was able to walk around by the end of the match, so that was fantastic. But I also do feel for the young docker because I don't think there was any malice in it. No. I mean, he shouldn't be tackling in that way.
So Gray's arms weren't pinned, were they?
No. They well, it depends on
they
who you
weren't
ask.
Totally pinned.
Yeah.
And when Gray was tackled, he had the ball. The ball came out. I don't know if Nia saw that. It's hard, isn't it, when you compare that to something like split the Tex Walker stuff. Incident, who yes. looks like, from my perspective, yeah. he's lining up to hit Zach Tui, and he gets a week for that. And then
yes.
Nias is going to, what, get
three probably. And so Paul Roos talking about that decision on the couch on Monday night.
Didn't hold back.
The most mind-boggling decision that Michael Christian has made all year, he suggested, with Tex Walker, which, calling that careless... I mean, it is careless, but it is also intentional. Yeah. So it, 1 week, when you compare that, as Roos did, to the other situations, other incidents that they've gotten 1 week, seem very unfair. I would be happy with Tex getting two. I don't mind Niehaus getting three, but it does go to the point that Roos also made, which is that we are focusing too much on outcomes rather than the process. That yeah. tackle itself is not worth 3 weeks.
It sounds like a broken record. That sentiment of outcome over process just continues to shine through.
Well, they're being consistent at least.
Yeah, that's very
frustratingly
true. Frustratingly consistent. Speaking of consistent, it is always a consistent. It is a big segment here on the Fox Footy podcast. Tom Morris not around this week. Sarah Ollie's going to take charge this week of Fair or Farce.
Howard Finkel entering the ring. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Fair or Farce.
That's a WWE wrestling ring announcer for all those playing at home, Sarah.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you, Max, for that beautiful introduction there. Fair or Farce, so Tom isn't here, but I'm going to carry on the spirit and hopefully we can get a little bit silly as this segment tends to be. Woo. Ben,
yes.
I'm going to start with you.
Yes.
The AFL needs to get serious and ban runners, fair or farce?
Oh, good question.
Whack.
Fair.
Really?
So, yeah, so I think this is fair. You know, one of the hardest things to explain to someone who's never watched the game before live, they just are fascinated by the men in fluoro running around. That's one of the hardest things to explain. Besides from that, I think Jeremy Laidlaw has not done the AFL running fraternity any favours by his actions during the final 2 minutes on the weekend.
So, not knowing his exact intentions, it sure looked like he was cheating.
The Swans were cheating.
By having him out there directing traffic and him standing by a spare man out of the contest. You look at the specific example that we put on the website, Ben Cunnington coming out of a clearance.
Yep.
He didn't look to be looking towards the spare man, the spare who sort of near the defensive 50.
Yep.
But if he did, he sees out of the corner of his eye a reddish, pinkish thing instead of just blue, and he doesn't look to kick there.
It looks suspicious.
Doesn't it?
I don't think they'll be totally banned. This is what I think will happen. I don't think they'll be totally banned, but there'll be some tinkering to the point where they might be having to get on and off within 30 to 40 seconds after a goal. That's where I think this is heading.
I liked Alan Richardson pointing out that you could just easily time it. And if you go over, say, a minute or 30, 40 seconds, whatever it is, you give away a free kick.
Yep. Imagine the backlash then.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Just another sort of thing we have to try and police in the
but
game.
But if you know hard and fast rules about it, instead of having the grey area, it's a lot easier to police.
It's like the anti-density rules with the NR18 TSC
Cup. Do we think he was out there of his own volition, or do we think that one John Longmire was instructing him to be there?
I imagine the coaches would have instructed him to be there.
Yep.
As they sort of talked about this on 360 as well, that they could go into quite in-depth with their messages of what they're asking the runners to deliver to quite a few players. So that can force them to spend that time out there. But there's also Jeremy Laidlaw's, you're one of your favourite Swans, of course, Sarah.
Yes.
Probably the most significant thing he ever did for the club, to be frank, Max. Okay, let's move on.
Wow.
Max, Grand Slams must introduce a tiebreak to decide fifth sets. Fair or farce?
Fair. I don't like five sets anyway. I think five sets should be abolished completely. We're just moving on from that whack, by the
yes.
way. Yes. And there are so many difficult issues that emerge from having the eternally long semi-finals that we saw at Wimbledon from the men's side of the draw.
Cost Kevin Anderson, didn't it, surely?
And cost the women having the day to themselves and so many. I mean, to be fair, I don't know that Anderson was going to beat Djokovic either way. But it's still a difficult thing. You don't need five sets that can go on to infinity. It's great afterwards, but perhaps this is me speaking as someone who has worked on the Australian Open tennis.
Yes, yes.
Five-set matches are not fun to cover.
No, they're not.
It's too much. Who wants to sit down and watch 4 hours of tennis? 4 hours plus. It's stupid.
And the five sets happened during the day as well at Wimbledon. Poor,
yes.
Poor Sarah and Maxie during the Australian Open in January, staying up to ungodly hours.
Won't someone think of the journalists?
Yeah.
I know, seriously.
We will, certainly, as journalists.
Very good from you, Maxie.
Abolish.
Okay, Ben.
Yes.
Paddy Ryder is a bigger loss to Port than Nick Nat is to the Eagles in the context of this season.
Ooh.
No, I still think that's a farce. I still think Nick Natanui's importance to West Coast is greater than Paddy Ryder, because Port Adelaide have been able to prove to another extent, maybe not as much as West Coast, but that they can cover for Paddy Ryder. They did that sort of during the middle of the season. So I don't think the loss is as significant.
Can I provide the counter argument that would go towards the fair option?
Yes.
My guess.
They can easily lose to GWS this week because of the injury, because of the makeshift ruck situation, and that one loss could see them drop out of the top four. And then that has a bigger impact than West Coast if they can cover with Lysette.
I still think with Ollie Wines in outstanding form, him sort of leading that midfield brigade, that the Power can cover the loss.
Okay.
Maxi.
Hi.
If Ben Ronk were playing for Collingwood, we'd be talking about him as the rising star favourite, fair or farce?
No, farce, because Jaden Stevenson's still playing there.
Well, let me read you out some stats, Maxi.
Please.
So, Ronk has played 11 matches and Stevenson has played 16.
Good.
Ronk has 13.4 disposals on average compared to Stevenson's 12.6.
Okay.
He has 3.9 tackles compared to Stevenson's 2.9.
That is more.
And he has 1.9 goals compared to 1.6 for Stevenson.
How many of Ronk's goals have come in two games?
Well, he's a big game 14. Player, Maxie.
or that's luck.
How
and
many
a bit
players
of
in their first year kick a bag of five and a bag of seven?
Very few, I would suggest. And that is impressive. But I would also say that is, in a way, a feature of the Swans forward line, that random small forwards can sometimes pop up and swing a final or a game like Ronk has done. So I would still prefer Stevenson of the pair. And I think the rising star should be more about the quality of the player overall than purely stats in that first year.
You know, Ben Ronk, those two big games are coming against Hawthorn on a Friday night at the MCG. That's kick seven then. Then five against North Melbourne in arguably the game of the round on Sunday. He doesn't play for Collingwood, but he's done two pretty darn good efforts in Melbourne, and it's certainly caught everyone's attention.
Okay, Ben, more list managers should do media opportunities like one Sauce.
Yes.
Fair or farce?
This is fair. Now, I don't know how often list managers are asked for. So Josh Gabalich for foxfooty.com.au has talked to Derek Hine in recent weeks about Steel Sidebottom and Jack Crisp ahead of respective milestone games, which was a great insight as well. I think Sauce was coming from the perspective that list managers under pressure or clubs under pressure for recruiting and trading in recent years. I think it'd be good to hear about, certainly from a club's perspective, the process that went, I think, during the time. So I would like to see more of it. The asterisk is, how often are they actually requested for by media organisations? I'm not 100% sure.
And if they continue to come out more and more, are they just not going to be more media trained and more playing ducks and drakes and giving out false information because they're trying to win trades? They're trying to get players that other people aren't.
And the other asterisk is, they are always available. Well, there's always one spokesperson after the grand final during the off-season per club, either a football manager, list manager, recruiter, whatever. That always happens. So I think we're talking about in season.
Yes.
Yes. When they're just as relevant as when they are during the off-season.
This is true.
Maxi, Usain Bolt coming to the Central Coast Mariners is bigger than Cristiano Ronaldo signing with Juventus. Oh. Fair or farce?
No, it's not. It's a farce. Bunch of... What is he going to race a sauce bottle at halftime? What's going on up
there? Fan engagement.
I'd love to see that. 6-week trial for Usain Bolt. I want to like the A-League. I remember after the 2010 World Cup, I decided I'm going to get into soccer. And I signed up as a foundation member of Melbourne Heart.
Oh, no.
Yes. And I was there with the 5,500 for their first game against the Central Coast Mariners on a Friday night. It was very exciting. And then they just, I don't know what they're doing. There's so many issues with the way soccer is handled in this country compared to others. And I don't think Usain Bolt is going to help generate lifelong soccer fans, which is what they need, rather than people coming for the spectacle.
Do you think it makes a mockery of the A-League?
To a point, yes. And Ronaldo going to Juventus could swing that league and the Champions League. So that realistically has more of an impact on the global soccer landscape.
Apparently they've already sold 500,000 Ronaldo jerseys.
Oh my God.
He's rather popular, I hear.
Yeah, I hear he's pretty good at soccer.
We'll see.
All right, we're going to conclude with you, Ben.
Yes, wow.
Tom Morris needs to rethink his life and whether going to Europe mid-season is a good idea, fair or farce.
In arguably the most impressive debut in the Fox Footy podcast ever.
Thank you.
You saved the best until last. I think this is quite fair. You see Tom's Instagram work over recent days is quite disappointing. Johnny Ralph came in on the couch last night.
Very good pinch hitter.
Broke a couple of nice stories there about Tom Lynch and Josh Thomas re-signing for Collingwood. Yep. So Tommy, I think, better watch his back on the couch, but also I think in the Fox Footy podcast.
That's entirely reasonable.
Very, very good on Fair or Fast debut, Maxie.
That was Fair or Fast.
I'm coming for your spot, Tom.
That's got some love. Just before we get into the tips and the cups, we do probably have to talk about that Sydney-North Melbourne game a little bit. So we talked about the Jeremy Laidler aspect, the Ben Ronk aspect, but one of the great things to come out of the game, and Matt Barmer, I think, captured this really well for foxfooty.com.au after the game, was the matchup between Majak Dore and Alia. Granted that this is a sight, I think, to see two players with an African background going at it in different sports, and that was, I think, pointed out on social media, football and basketball in particular, and that was... That was sort of slanted, you know, a couple of those social media tweets in a negative way for the AFL. But I think that we captured the right tone. This was celebrated because it was an enthralling contest, has to be said.
It was arguably the game of the season, that one, and that specific contest was so great to see. I think the people complaining that, oh, well, soccer's done that, you can praise more than one thing in a go, can't you? You can say that it's good to see at the AFL level without saying, that's not denigrating soccer or basketball or anything like that. It's ridiculous comments from some people. But, that was fantastic to see. And they contributed to how the game played out, one of the biggest contests of the entire match.
So fascinating. And Majak, he's proved so many people wrong, and good for him.
Yeah.
Because he is one of the most maligned players, or has been, in the AFL. And if you listen to the post-match commentary, when Alia and Majak are standing side by side, Alia says, you know, Majak inspired me and is inspiring other young boys of African descent. So what Majak's done is he's been a pioneer in many respects and inspired the likes of Alia. And, yeah, he was sensational. I mean, Alia got the win. He got that last goal, his first ever AFL goal. What a time to pull that one out of the hat. But I think Majak was probably the better of the two players as a whole throughout the day.
Yep.
Alia probably in that last quarter just did a few things to step up, but it was because he was allowed to run loose.
He had 23 touches, I think, Alia as well. Mm. He's a fascinating story for Swan supporters, because he burst onto the scene. I think you famously said that Alia would be an All-Australian in 2017.
Well, that looked like a pretty fearless good predictions. Suggestion at that point in time.
You were without fear when you made that.
Yes. But then I think the quote that sort of summed it up for me, and Majak told this to foxfooty.com.au, I think if there are any African kids watching out there today, that was an example of it doesn't matter where you come from, you can play at the highest level, you can do anything in this country, which is very nicely put.
Great to see.
I think.
Can we talk about the one other issue that emerged from this weekend, sort of a off-field one with West Coast?
Mm.
The cameraman situation.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Can we please talk about this?
So if you guys want to talk about it more generally, I have some comments about the way people responded to it. Explain sort of what happened for people who missed it.
Yes, so Nick Natanui was coming back via Perth Airport very late at night, I think close to midnight.
Yes.
From what I've seen from Perth reporters who've tweeted out on social media, there was an agreement for camera people to film Nick Natanui getting into a car from the main entrance. At the last minute, West Coast changed that tact. I'm not sure whether they communicated that to media outlets, but cameras followed Nick Nat to the back entrance where he was filmed. From what is understood, this is the argument from media people, is that a respectable distance was given from the camera people to Natanui. And then a West Coast Eagles staffer has gone up to two camera people, I think from Channel 9 and Channel 7 respectively, and has got in their face assaulted, I think, is probably a little bit too far.
You should not be physically approached and pushed away while doing your job.
Yes,
in any job.
Yeah,
unless it may be UFC or something like that.
So I think that's the context. I think I've got both parties right in terms of West Coast changing direction, but originally giving that opportunity for media, and then media being trying to catch him out from the back entrance.
And it sparks so much debate, hasn't it? Even on Talking Footy, not that I want to pump up that show too much, but there was an interesting exchange between Sam McClure, who's a journalist, and Luke Darcy, who and Campbell Brown, who are both past footballers. And at one point, Luke Darcy, he was just kind of brushing Sam aside as like, you wouldn't know what it's like to have an injury and stuff. Well, sorry, Sam's allowed to have an opinion as a journalist. He doesn't have to have played the game to be entitled to an opinion in this circumstance.
Particularly around this issue.
If anything, he knows more about that than they do, because he knows what the point of... So, this is journalists backing journalists, sure.
Yeah.
But there is this ridiculous notion that these were parasitic journalists trying to film him. And what are they doing? Just give him some privacy. For television journalism, you need images, relevant images.
Yep. And that's about as relevant as it gets.
Him limping on crutches. And that also allows Eagles fans to see his status, how he's going.
Yep.
If they saw he was walking freely, that would be a very different view from that one image.
Yep.
And you can very easily make this not an issue by just letting him be filmed, as was the original intention.
Yes, exactly.
The idea that the media is doing something wrong here by filming an injured superstar player is preposterous. Mm. And it goes to this weird distrust that everyone has now of the media. Like, it's spread from the US. There's this tribalism and all of this, and everyone's like, oh, the media's just out to get everyone, and they hate everything, and they're so negative. No, we're trying to do our jobs, and people don't respect very basic elements of that and just assume the absolute worst. And it's so frustrating. So frustrating.
Yeah, it is. It is a polarizing issue, no doubt about that.
I don't get people.
It certainly does, no doubt about that. Let's get into the Round 18 Tips and Cups, a favourite time of the week. And you did a nice job sort of with your Dingle steak knives kind of this opportunity last week there, Maxie. St Kilda and Richmond for the Aaron Fiora Cup on Friday night footy. Sarah, who wins this?
Richmond.
I would like to think Richmond would bounce back from a loss, given that this game is in Victoria, where they're probably going to go unbeaten this season.
It's Matty Rewalt's match.
It is.
Just to bring that up, it's a very important match for both Rewalt men, and it should be a very special night.
And Jack Rewalt will launch, I suppose, Fox Footy's push around this match on AFL 360 on Tuesday night. I'm sure Nick Rewalt will back him up on Wednesday night as well. Collingwood and North Melbourne for the Saverio Rocker Cup.
What a cup.
Third v ninth.
Levi Greenwood Shield also.
Oh, yes. Levi Greenwood, best on ground, I think, is being awarded afterwards. Yeah. Who wins, Maxie?
This is a really interesting game.
Yeah.
It's how much do we trust Collingwood? I think we sort of said they'd won seven in a row, but we didn't trust them completely. This is a good team in North. They looked really good at times against Sydney, nearly getting over the line there. But how good are both of these teams? We need to find that out. I still think Collingwood's the better team here. I think Collingwood still makes the top four.
Right.
Because they need to win probably four games, get to 15 wins.
They've done the hard work, haven't they?
Yes. And I think they can make it. And I think if they win this, they're well on their way to losing to Richmond in a qualifying final, which is exciting.
Yes. I wouldn't be surprised if North are exceptionally flat after not getting over the line against the Swans and that they're well beaten.
So you're saying the opposite effect. Sometimes they think, they'll come out even more determined and play with a passion.
No.
Yeah, but they'll be flat.
Yeah.
On the heels, right. Sydney Swans and the Gold Coast Suns for the Nick Malcheski.
Too soon, Ben.
Why?
Too soon.
For the Stuart Dew zipped up hoodie.
Ah, yes. And what a zipped up hoodie it is.
Look, Stuart.
Extra large.
I speak to you as a not thin man. Do not zip up your hoodie fully. It does not work. It does not look good. It accentuates your issues.
Thank you, Maxie.
Why don't coaches wear suits?
We're not the NBA.
I like a suit.
Dennis Pagan. I think Dennis Pagan was the last coach to don suits on game day. I think.
I feel like you have to do a lot more walking up and down a lot of stairs if you're an AFL coach, getting up to the coach's box, down for quarter time.
Have a bit of self-respect. Look at all the managers at World Cup. They look dapper as.
They're not coming all the way up from the stands and stuff.
Could honestly be the most interesting aspect of this game, Stuart Dew's attire. So,
actually correct.
Who might take this game out, though, Sarah?
Well, Sarah's already predicted the Suns will win. We heard that earlier.
Yes. Oh, that's right.
Ironclad guarantee.
No, I'm going to kiss my Aaliyah badge again because it had such a good effect. And
did you kiss your Aaliyah badge before?
Yeah, on the show, had my Aaliyah badge
on. Oh, of course,
on
the lowdown. Yes.
I'm like Sunka with in Cool Runnings with the lucky egg. Kiss the lucky egg, kiss the Aaliyah badge. It's a good luck charm.
That's the comparison I was thinking of.
Played his best game ever. Essendon and Fremantle, I couldn't decide. I have to split this between the McPhee, Kepler-Bradley, Scott Gumbleton Cup. There are some ripping representatives from both of these clubs over the past 20 years or so. This is a weird game. It's like 12th v 13th. They're probably both out of finals contention.
Yeah. Essendon's not going to make it. They need to win all their games.
It feels very dead rubberish at the moment.
It's around 23 sort of areas way. Look, keep in mind, though, that Fremantle beat Essendon at Optus earlier this season.
They did, yes.
You wonder if Essendon has that game in mind, because they've won. If they won that, they could still make finals. They can't now. Maybe a slight bit of revenge if they win this one. And I would think they would.
I can't see Freo winning two games in a row without Fife and Sandy.
On the road as well.
Yeah,
it'll be tough. Brisbane and Adelaide for the Matthew Clark Cup. Matthew Clark, AFLW coach for Adelaide next season, Sarah.
Yes. R.I.P. Bet Goddard.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know that anyone who lives in Canberra is necessarily dead. just in the heart.
Who are the Lions a chance here to make it four in a row?
Yes.
Can we pretend?
In fact, I'm going to tip the Lions.
Hey, you're back tipping the Lions.
Yes,
they better win.
It worked so well for you earlier in the season.
I know, but I'm just fully taken up in the, I don't know what it is about the Lions. I'm obsessed with them.
They're very close on percentage, honestly. It's like 6 or 7 points. Brisbane at home, that makes that up for the most part. Brisbane can easily win this. And if Tom Morris was here, he would say, I love watching the Lions.
If I could pick so one game fun to watch, it'd be the Lions and North Melbourne. I just love them. They're exciting.
And that's probably the best impression I've heard of Tom for quite some time. Geelong and Melbourne, this is huge down at GMHBA Stadium. Mm. This will be for the Clint Bizzle Cup.
Yes.
Yes, childhood hero who was a great goal kicker and took numerous high-flying marks at his peak.
Thank you.
The Dees, can they continue their winning ways? Famously, this is the game that Max Gawn announced himself as a genuine superstar a fair few years ago when Melbourne beat Geelong down at GMHBA Stadium.
Was that the year Geelong missed the final?
I think it might have been.
Like 2014, if 15-ish?
Yes.
This is a huge game. We talked about the stakes a little bit earlier. I think both teams can still make it if they lose, but it does make it really tough, particularly for Geelong. Mm. Geelong's probably got 3 or 4 pretty guaranteed wins left, although one of those is Brisbane and we don't know. But there's a few games at GMHBA, but they're going to have to play faultless footy for the rest of the season if Geelong does lose this. And I really like Melbourne. Down there,
you said they win the flag or miss the finals.
Yes, and this is one of those games where they either prove themselves or start to slide towards the bottom 10. So
Geelong do play up, though. I feel like the better the quality opposition, the better Geelong play. And Melbourne still are yet to really have a big scalp, really.
Melbourne should have won last time they played.
Yep, round one.
Except for the Max Gawn.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda, Max.
Well, yeah. From an analytical perspective, it does have some impact on my decision making. I'll go Geelong, but not very confidently, although that's every week as a Cats fan.
Yeah, no, I think I'll stick with Geelong down there.
Carlton and Hawthorn, early Sunday game. This is for Daniel Harford Cup. Of course,
Harford played
that one season with Carlton very famously running around there. The Hawks without James Sicily for the first time for 6 weeks.
Yes, that's not ideal for them. This is the game they lost in round 22 to end their finals hopes last year.
Liam Jones was awesome that night.
They really shouldn't have lost that game, and it's not a great sign for the Hawks.
Did Hawthorn lose to Carlton last year?
They did.
Round 22.
They've beaten Essendon this year and then beaten Hawthorn. They're their last two wins.
I just don't remember that.
It's really weird. So Hawthorn is capable of losing this game. I think they are so hard to peg. They're capable of challenging top 14.
They're not losing to Carlton.
They're not losing to Carlton. Are you serious?
No, they're not.
Come on, Maxie.
I was talking them up last week. I was really optimistic on them, and they let me down a little bit, so I'd just like to get that out there.
Sure.
West Coast and the Western Bulldogs. This is the 3:20 Sunday game. Normally, of course, you see the Optus Stadium game 4:40, but this is 3:20. The Eagles and the Bulldogs playing for the Andrew McDougall Cup. Drew Jones' favourite West Coast Eagle player from quite a few years ago. Says who wins?
I think this could be really ugly.
Right.
I think the Eagles could win by 100 points.
Right.
Yep.
They won really big round one against the Dogs, did they not? Was that this year?
Round 2 or 3 maybe at
Etihad. Yep. Yes. Yeah. Early on, that was a big
win. That's when Liam Ryan really announced himself.
Oh, he did too,
yes.
Yes, he did too.
Yeah, they could.
You were at that game.
Yeah.
I remember building a copy for that. Port Adelaide
and beautiful, crisp copy.
Yes. Port Adelaide and GWS. The final game of the round might be game of the round.
Yep.
The Power and the Giants for the Dean Brogan Cup, who's still with the Giants, I think, in a coaching capacity. 5th versus 7th, Maxie. Big run home things going on
really
here.
Really big implications for the finals. More importantly, though, this is not my observation. This is someone on Twitter. I forget who it was. But Dean Brogan looks like both of the mascots for Port and GWS.
Oh, that's such a good tweet.
He so does.
That's brilliant.
Giant head looking guy. Fantastic. Well done, Dave Brogan. So Port GWS is a big game. Do we trust Port again? Because they keep like inching over the line and they just put up that utter crap against Frio. How can we believe in them again? And GWS has looked really good recently.
And they beat Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval.
I'm tipping GWS.
Same. They're on a roll. They are on an absolute roll, and I would not want to be playing them for the rest of the season.
They're a really dangerous team. Yep. That could easily make a prelim again.
Can we just talk about the Toby Green factor?
Oh, he was awesome, wasn't he?
God, he makes some two or three goal better team.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the premier forwards in the competition.
I love it when he took that mark. He just put his hand up. Nah.
Nope. In the forward pocket. Yes.
And he got it. Love it.
Yeah. He delivered superbly. Well done, Sarah. Another fantastic week from you on the Fox Footy podcast.
Yes, of course.
Big lowdown back on Thursday night as well.
Yes, back on Thursday night. So we'll have all the teams, which makes it a little bit easier to do a team show.
It does, to say the least. Great work, Sarah. Great work, Maxie. And make sure you keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.